This is People First Radio On Demand, podcasts, streaming, and MP3 downloads, available when you want to listen at chly.ca and at the People First Radio website.
CHLY 101.7 FM, Vancouver Island. On the web, www.chly.ca.
5 days after undergoing gastric bypass surgery to reduce the size of her stomach and lose weight, Adriana O'Regan knew something was wrong. She became violently ill and couldn't even keep down water. But when she went to a local hospital, she was refused admission by a triage nurse who said her illness was her body's way of telling her that she needed to lose weight. O'Regan saw her surgeon the next day and learned her bowel had blown up like a balloon, a complication that, if left untreated, would have been fatal. University of Alberta researcher Mary Forehan says this kind of weight bias isn't confined to Hollywood or popular culture, but happens everywhere, including the healthcare sector, where consequences can be life or death. We're joined on the phone now by Mary Forehan.
Welcome to People First Radio, Mary.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Mary, weight bias is defined, and I took this from stuff that you have written, as the negative attitudes and beliefs attributed to an individual based on their body weight. Tell us more about this kind of bias and what it looks like.
Sure. Well, weight bias really results in people having beliefs and expectations about people who live with obesity, such as, you know, attributing being lazy or unmotivated or even being less intelligent than a person who doesn't live with obesity. And when a group of people or an individual holds such negative beliefs about individuals, it can really lead to having lower expectations. So, for example, weight bias by a healthcare professional can lead to an expectation that their patient won't follow through with recommendations or maybe isn't even capable of making, understanding how to manage their own care.
Now, your research has revealed a connection of sorts between the stigmatization of people or persons with obesity and inequities in obesity treatment with respect to access and quality of health care. Those are a lot of words. Help us to understand what that connection is and what it really means.
Okay, well, I recently conducted a review of the literature and the evidence looking at weight bias and how it does have an impact on access to health care, but also equity. And so when we're talking about access to health care, we're really talking about people living with obesity who are able to access the services and care that any person should be able to access just to take care of their everyday health. But then when we talk about equity, it's about this narrowing window of opportunity to be able to get the right care from the right provider in a timely manner that really puts individuals living, and I'm really talking about people with severe obesity, having less opportunities to get the type of care that could be preventative in terms of just regular preventative health care, or accessing care in a timely way so that any health issues aren't getting worse while they're waiting for care.
How pervasive, how common is this problem, the bias against heavy people or weight bias in healthcare settings?
Well, when we were doing the review, and I did this with a PhD student of mine in the School of Public Health here at the University of Alberta, and when we were looking at this, we really found that it was pervasive throughout the healthcare system. So from primary healthcare, where people are going to see their general practitioner or a healthcare team, right through to specialty care, and even within areas where we would expect that people would be more knowledgeable about obesity, there was still weight bias even amongst obesity experts.
Mary, you've observed that the stigmatized nature of obesity has also influenced behaviors of policymakers.
Yeah.
Now, I'm wondering if you could give us a brief sense of how policymakers are involved in this whole challenge.
Well, policymakers or decision makers in the area of healthcare or access to medical interventions, they're not immune to the sort of stereotypes that are pervasive in our society as well. And what ends up happening sometimes is that when decisions are being made about the types of medical interventions that are made available to patients, we were really quite surprised to find that even within the U.S., when we were looking at some of the decisions decisions made by the FDA or the Food and Drug Administration is that the comments about anti-obesity drugs were made sort of indicative of the fact that they didn't give patients with obesity enough credit to be knowledgeable about being able to weigh the risk factors associated with some of these medications. I'm not suggesting that medications should be passed at will, but it seems to be that there's more caution, and some of the rationale seemed to be about the perspective of the competence of individuals who would actually be partaking in that treatment. Other policies that come up are where we associate costs associated with obesity, and there seems to be a lot of direct association between obesity causing increased healthcare costs, when we need to dig a little bit further and really say, is it really the obesity that's causing the increased cost, or is it because our healthcare system isn't able to provide access and the resources needed to effectively treat patients with obesity? And then another bias that happens with respect to policies is policies around charging higher insurance premiums for individuals living with obesity, essentially saying, you know, you can control this and you should be able to manage this, therefore we're going to be charging you more, when that may not be the case at all.
Adriana O'Regan is the name of an individual who experienced this firsthand. We opened this segment with some of her story. She had undergone gastric bypass surgery and then went into the hospital looking for help, but there were weight-related issues that emerged at that point. Can you tell us more about her story or about the stories of some of the other people that you've encountered in your work?
Absolutely. Well, I think, you know, I certainly give Adriana credit for being so public about her story, because it really draws attention to a really important issue. And her situation arose from this sort of general pervasive belief that whenever any individual living with obesity presents with a healthcare concern, that it's automatically attributed to their weight, when, you know, we could be missing something much more serious underlying issue that has absolutely nothing to do with the patient's weight. I've also heard of, you know, situations where patients have come in complaining of pain, for example, in their hip. And I've heard stories where patients were complaining of hip pain, severe hip pain, for several weeks and in some cases months. And it ends up that they were walking on a fractured hip or a fracture in their pelvis that would have been discovered had someone taken the time to talk to them about their pain and taken that pain seriously and done some x-rays, rather than attributing the pain to carrying extra weight.
You've written that clinical practice guidelines for the treatment of obesity in children and adults were published by the Canadian Medical Association in 2007, but it seems that there has been minimal uptake, and these are your words, of the recommendations in clinical practice. Tell us more about that.
Yeah, well, the studies that have been done really show, with any clinical practice guidelines, they're usually quite dense and complex with a lot of information, which is really important for health and safety. But what ends up happening is that practitioners are so busy to be able to read through these dense guidelines, and this is the case with the obesity guidelines as well, is that they need to be translated into sort of user-friendly sections, so that practitioners who are really, you know, busy have quick access to information that they can readily apply in the clinical situation. I am happy to report that there is quite a lot of work happening within Canada to try to improve the uptake of the guidelines through education and through some really creative resource tools that practitioners can really use, particularly in the primary care area.
You presented at a 2013 conference of the Canadian Obesity Network, and I think you gave a talk there. We have the YouTube clip of that talk at mm-hmm. the People First Radio webpage. And the question was, will accommodation of persons with obesity promote obesity? And that reminded me, Mary, of the whole discussion that surrounds harm reduction. And I guess accommodation is like a cousin of harm reduction. And I'm wondering if you could speak to that. Is that a realistic concern, or is it a kind of a stereotypical notion?
Yeah, well, when I was asked to do the talk, I think the premise was that if we provide accommodations, that it's going to promote the rates of obesity, that it's going to show acceptance, and that, you know, everyone will want to develop obesity, which is really quite absurd when you think about that. And what I did in that talk is really turn that perspective around and talk about the fact that by providing accommodations in the built environment or in our social attitudes around obesity, it actually provides opportunities to promote the visibility of the capacity and the skills and the talents that individuals have that we don't get to see if people can't engage in the everyday life, that we don't get to meet them in our work, in our education, in our social context. So the notion that by making life easier for people with obesity will actually increase the rate of obesity, I would say is not true whatsoever.
Mary Forehand, we have just a moment left in our conversation today. Is there anything else that you'd like to add to this?
No, I just, you know, thank you for taking the time to make this issue more public. And, you know, we've got a long way to improve the perceptions of people living with obesity. But I think from a healthcare perspective, we're really trying to make some inroads there and hope that we see some changes in the near future.
Thank you very much for taking the time to join us. It was much appreciated. Bye-bye.
Bye. Thank you.
Mary Forehand is an occupational therapist and an assistant professor in the Faculty of Rehabilitation Medicine at the University of Alberta. You can find out more about weight bias at obesitynetwork.ca.
This is a People First Radio podcast. People First Radio is an initiative of Columbian Center Society in partnership with the Radio Malaspina Society and produced at CHLY Community Radio in Nanaimo, British Columbia. The opinions expressed in this interview do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the partnering organizations. Visit us online. Just Google People First Radio to find our webpage.